city, his house. No one beats him in his house. Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports. Now, now, now. On the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help. When I was younger, so much younger than today.
Hour number two of the radio program for this Friday, the 19th of December, 2014. It's prime time on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks. Roundtable has assembled such that it is. Yours truly, Bob McCown, along with John Shannon right over there. Elliot Friedman right here, and a raw rookie from the National Post, Scott Stinson, right down there. Nice of you to join us. Good luck.
Thank you.
Especially with these two boneheads.
Come on, Bob.
How's everybody? Okay? Got your Christmas shopping done, Shen?
Oh, ages ago, Robert.
Really?
Yes. Well, except for my wife.
And the,
no,
two, and the kids.
Well, no. Not only that, I haven't got her Christmas present, and tomorrow's our anniversary. I am absolutely up the creek.
Well, nice knowing you, John.
Yeah. See ya.
I think I'm going to pretend to forget it and buy her a plant on Sunday. How's that? I've done that before.
Hon, I was waiting for a sale.
That doesn't go over at our house.
Before we get started, the 31 Days of Christmas are in full swing for the Michael Pinball Clements Foundation. You can go to www.mpcf.ca. You can click on Sponsor Me. Donate, and you could win a signed Sidney Crosby Team Canada jersey from 2010. The winner will be announced on Christmas Eve. So far, we've raised over $18,000 for the Michael Pinball Clements Foundation. That's nice. But the goal is $100,000. So we got a long way to go. And we hope you will take a second, click, and help us out. Thank you very much. The Toronto Maple Leafs winning streak came to a crashing halt last night against a pretty bad hockey club in Carolina. But I can't say that I'm surprised. I just thought it was a sandwich game. I thought it was the kind of game the Toronto Maple Leafs were probably meant to lose. They're going on the road for the first time in quite a while. Well, I mean, they played in Detroit a couple nights ago. That's not really a road trip.
Anywhere you go for college is not or on a college road trip does not count as an NHL road trip.
If you can drive there, it's not
that's
a road
right.
trip.
It doesn't count.
Right?
Yes.
So I guess I sort of saw it coming. But give me your assessment of the Maple Leafs' performance last night. Was it significant? Was it bleaker than the way they played in the first two periods against Anaheim?
Not really. I mean, if you look at the shots and everything, it was kind of par for the course of what we're seeing. I got a good laugh out of your audience the last hour. It's just, you said it so right. It's they win 10 out of 12, and all of a sudden they lose one game, trade everybody to Edmonton, and fire the general manager.
Yeah.
Boy, you know, we get off the roller coaster pretty quickly here in Toronto. The thing is that they understand to a degree that at times during that winning streak, they were doing it with a little bit of smoke and mirrors. Like when they beat Anaheim on Tuesday, on Wednesday morning, the players said they were getting a ton of video from the coaches about all the turnovers they were making.
Right.
They were under no illusions that they were steamrolling people. So, you know, I think I'm a big guy. It's all about the process, and the process still needs some work.
John.
Well, I mean, to Elliot's point, I think that there's a ton of things that if you sat Randy Carlyle's office over the last week, he'd be rolling his eyes. We won again, but oh my goodness, what did we do right in order to win? This was a team, and Bob, we touched on it yesterday. This was a team that was relying completely on scoring goals and on goaltending, great goaltending to have them win games. And so it became a track meet. And what they weren't playing was some disciplined hockey at times. And you know, again, what came back last night was the inability of the defensive side of the game to relieve some of the pressure that a team like Carolina, they're not a great hockey club, but there's still National Hockey League players on that team. You know, and there's still some guys that play with some pride, and there's still some guys that say, hey, the Maple Leafs are coming to town, and they're going to take us lightly, and we're going to beat them. And so, I mean, the stars aligned last night for Carolina because the Leafs did what every hockey fan worried they would do, and that was take them for granted.
Scott, get your first sentence in here.
Yeah, I mean, this was the revenge of math, really. They have been They've been riding this streak where...
Pull the microphone a little bit closer to you. There you go.
They've been riding this streak where they are outdoing what the numbers suggest they should be able to do when they're giving up a ton of shots and they're taking a ton of shots, but they're giving up that much more. Finally, it sort of catches up to them and everyone says, well, you know what they're doing. They're giving up too many shots and they've been giving up too many shots all season. So Randy Carlyle knows that this is the problem. He's known it for some time now. The question is, can he do anything about it? And I don't know yet that we've seen any evidence that he knows how to make this group of players play better defensive hockey. You know, I don't know if it's the lineup itself or it's just that this coaching staff can't figure out a way to make them stop giving up so many shots.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I pointed out was that a year ago, leading into the Sochi break, the Toronto Maple Leafs had about the same kind of record. I think they were 10-2-1 over 13 games, the last 13 games. And everybody went, oh, well, things, it's all good now. You know, they're going to make the playoffs.
It killed their momentum.
Yeah, the Sochi break. Well, I think what we know is that until we get some evidence, this is a fragile hockey team that can play well but can also play poorly.
I don't know if I would call them fragile. I don't think that they're really – if they were really fragile, they would have melted down after that Nashville game or a salute gate. I think they're tougher mentally.
Well, but wait a second. Historically, they've managed to run, have these kinds of runs previously.
Well, every team has that.
Sure.
But I'm just saying, I don't
nobody
think
more
group...
prolifically than the Toronto Maple Leafs in the last decade.
But I think the personality of this team I think is a little bit different. Like one of the things
I hope so.
Yeah, I think one of the things is that, you know, there's a lot of guys there with letters. There's a lot of guys there who don't have letters. I think they're deeper in terms of, like, I think their team is deeper on the ice, and I think they've got a bit of a different personality off the ice. I think the Robidas, the Winnicks, some of those guys have changed the personality of the team a little bit. And, Bob, honestly, I think if they were really fragile, they would have fallen apart after Buffalo and Nashville back-to-back.
You may be
Do
right.
we know how good they are? No, not yet. I doubt they're as good as they just showed. But I think they're deeper and they have a chance to be better.
I also think that this is still, you know, in the bottom third of average age in the National Hockey League. This is still a young hockey club. And what we saw over the years was that youthful enthusiasm when they were winning, that they weren't listening to the coach very much. They weren't heeding his, hey, guys, we got to keep doing this. We got to persevere in these situations. And that's what I think the fear Carlyle had over the last 10 days was that no matter what he was trying to coach, as long as they were scoring goals and they were winning, the players were having a good time. So the question for me becomes, was last night's embarrassing loss to a bad team enough of a warning for a young team? They're going to play another mediocre team tomorrow night in Philadelphia.
Whose goalie, like, all of a sudden got hurt in practice today.
Well,
so they'll be coming in a bit wobbly.
So how will they fend off a Philadelphia team that isn't very good?
Yep.
And tomorrow night, to me, is a bigger lesson for all of us on how good or how bad this team is. If they struggle against the Philadelphia Flyers, then it's the same old, same old. If they're able to turn it on and play some disciplined hockey, score some goals, not put as much pressure on whoever plays goal for them, whether I would assume it'll be Reimer tomorrow because they're going to play back-to-back and they got Chicago on Sunday. But Randy won't tell us until just after the anthem. I would assume that it'll be a situation that we'll learn a lot more with the game tomorrow night than we will with the loss last night.
See, I'm not sure that last night or tomorrow night's games are that critical. I think the critical mass is going to come with these next 20 games.
Oh, yeah.
Of which they play, what, 16 or 17
on the
road?
I think now it's 15 of 19 on the road.
This is where we're really going to find out. You know, what are they?
What do they need to do over those, say, 20 games now? You know, I mean, do they have to, if they play 500, you've got to
play more than 500, Bob. You got to play more than 500 now.
Well,
but you don't have
to play
you don't have to play a ton more than 500 for a period. I mean, they've played so well in the last little while. They tread water for a bit. They'll still be in a playoff spot, and then if they can play a good stretch again, they'll be, you know, back up there. They have to avoid, you know, a long stretch.
Well, they have to avoid what Calgary did. Calgary comes east and loses six in a row. LA didn't play well in the east.
They haven't played well.
Anaheim didn't play well in the east.
Well, at least LA did what Vancouver and Calgary couldn't do.
Get points.
Go home and win.
Yeah.
I mean, LA at least won at home.
Yeah.
I mean, Calgary and Vancouver have gone home and have not been very good at home as well.
You know what, Bob? You're going to know it when you see it, right? You'll watch them over the next 20 games and a lot of them on the road, as John said, and you'll look at what you see and you'll have an idea. I think the one thing about them that's pretty interesting is that not the last time Detroit came in, but two Detroit trips in here ago, we were chatting with Mike Babcock, and, you know, we said, you know, who are the best teams in the league? And, you know, he grabbed the stats page, and he circled all of the teams that had the best goal differential. And there were six teams, I think, that were plus 15 or better at the time, something like that. And he said, there you go. There's your best teams, the teams that are the best goal differential. And right now, Toronto is one of the three best goal differentials in the Eastern Conference. So if Mike Babcock says that that's a number that he looks at, that's interesting to me. I don't think the Maple Leafs are one of the three best teams in the Eastern Conference, but I am interested in the fact that he looks at that number, and right now that number looks very good for Toronto.
Well, the interesting thing about that is, of course, there's a seven-goal loss in that number, too.
Well, the team that has the weirdest distribution is Montreal. Like, they win games 2-1, they lose 8-0.
Yeah, right.
So theirs is a bit skewed. But I just found that when I looked at that today, and I just happened to notice that, I thought that was really interesting.
If the Maple Leafs were going to make a move, now we know we're in the Christmas break here. I assume nothing's going to happen over the next couple of weeks.
11:59 tonight.
6 hours.
So
can we make a show out of that? We could probably get a show out of that.
I'm shocked.
Bob, will you come in tonight?
Can you co-host? I'm surprised you haven't.
Yeah, you're going to do the Christmas trade-free show on Sportsnet Radio?
You're not doing one down at the other studio?
No.
It's a miracle.
I think I might be.
All by yourself?
Alone, again,
this
naturally.
Is Bob McCallum with its Christmas trade-freeze on Sportsnet Radio.
Well, okay, so what do you want if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs? Like, well, I mean, you... The most obvious is
first
give me a
vet. Center.
Well, yeah. I was going to say a frontline defenseman, but they're impossible to get.
Very hard.
No, they're impossible to
Very
get.
Very hard.
So what are you going to do? Are you looking, if Edmonton is actually interested in moving one of their top four young guys, and we don't know that they are, but if they are you talking to them?
Well, there's no untouchables on Edmonton. Let's make it clear. There's nobody sitting there saying these guys, these four
guys.
Well, no.
They will take Sidney Crosby for Taylor Hall.
Yeah. I mean,
Do you think Pittsburgh would do that deal, Bob?
No.
Oh, okay, just
guessing they won't.
And that becomes the real crux of your question, because who would Edmonton really like on the Toronto Maple Leafs? That becomes a bigger question rather than who is Edmonton going to move. Who's out there? I mean, you can talk all you want about Taylor Hall going, you know, we hear a lot about Boston.
Or Pittsburgh.
But you name some players on Boston that the Oilers would want to talk about. I mean, and Peter Chiarelli would laugh at you. They would laugh at you. So, I mean, it's pie in the sky stuff.
If Edmonton wanted Dion Phaneuf, would you?
No.
You wouldn't if you were Toronto. Is that what you're saying?
No, I wouldn't if I was Edmonton.
Well, but the premise is
I was wondering where you were going there.
If Edmonton wanted Dion Phaneuf, if they were interested in that conversation for one of their top young guys,
no, Bob, no,
the Maple Leafs wouldn't be interested.
Oh, I mean, I don't know. That's a good question. Why I don't know why.
That's why
I don't know. I don't know why.
Sure, they would.
After one game, I don't know why you're upsetting the chemistry in Toronto anyway.
If you're asking the question,
we're just talking.
We're just talking. If the Edmonton Oilers are going to call the Toronto Maple Leafs and say,
"God, we really want Phaneuf.
If we want Phaneuf, I'm sure.
Well, wouldn't he fit there?
I don't. First of all, I'm not sure they're interested because
I'm guessing they wouldn't
remember,
be. But
we're saying they are.
Okay, yes, we're saying we're being sports radio callers here for a couple of minutes.
At least Scott's listening to you, Bob.
He's fitting in beautifully.
Can you get me a coffee, please? Because you're not contributing anything else.
Yeah, I mean, if you're the Leafs, sure you'd do that, but I don't think that's realistic.
But I think sort of to your point, Bob, I think that the Leafs are at a point, if we're all in agreement that it was a bit of smoke and mirrors and they're not as good as the last 12 games showed them to be, then the idea is they want to get better for the long haul. And if they can get a good young player from Edmonton for whatever the package happens to be, then the Leafs shouldn't be protecting too many players on that roster either. They've got goaltenders that Edmonton would probably want. They probably have a couple of young guys that, you know, maybe they trade in a package with a goaltender to pry one of those good young forwards away from Edmonton. Seems like something you'd do, because ultimately you have to say, if you're Toronto, we're probably not going to win the Stanley Cup this year. I think everybody knows that. So if you've got a desperate team that wants to make a deal with you, well, that's a pretty good team to talk to.
And yet, Scott, you look at the Eastern Conference last year. Look how everything evolved last year. If I would have told you at this point last year that the New York Rangers would be the Stanley Cup finalist,
yeah,
you would have told me I was smoking something.
Yeah, difference between first in the East and eighth.
Well, it's just,
even in the West, like,
but the combination of injuries, you know, I mean, Montreal should have gone to the final with a cakewalk without Carey Price really getting hurt, right? Fair to say, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and that's why, Bob, like, last hour, I heard you and the callers talking about how you just want to be, the bar is set too low to be just seen as one of the top 16. I disagree with that. And the reason I disagree with is that, first of all, I think it's really hard to make the playoffs now. I think it's really hard to get in. And secondly, we've seen now it's a crapshoot once you get in there. In 2006, the Edmonton Oilers made the seventh game of the Stanley Cup Finals an eighth seed. The LA Kings won the Stanley Cup as an eighth seed. The Philadelphia Flyers went to the sixth game of the Stanley Cup Final as a seventh seed. Like, I think now, you obviously you want to win the Stanley Cup. I don't think anybody has anything less than that goal. But I think understanding that you've got to get in there for the chance to play there first, it's a big deal, because the playoffs now, the margin of victory is so thin. So thin.
Yeah, I'll give you that, I suppose. I just think that the Leafs' aspirations to be a playoff team is a very low bar. I mean, they don't aspire to win a cup. They don't talk about winning cups.
I don't believe that.
I don't hear them talking about it.
I tell you what,
we'd call them idiots if they did. If they did it aloud.
I think.
Well, then why would you talk about it?
I think the Maple Leafs right now, who, you know, whether it's Shanahan or Dave Nonis or whoever's doing interviews at this point, they really tried to undersell themselves right
yeah,
now. They are. I mean, Nona said on the flagship station this week, you know, we're a good team, but we've got lots of work to do. We know where we are, and they're really hedging their own bets. In my mind, they're really trying to understate what they are at this point. So, simply because I and the fans have kind of. They've bought into that too.
Promise low, leap over the bar.
Well, yeah.
That's what you do.
Well, yeah, and the bar is the top 16 teams in the National Hockey League. I think that bar is too low, and I don't think this team is good enough to be. Well, I don't know if they're good enough to be that good to be in the top 16. I don't think anybody here is thinking about them in terms of Stanley Cup.
No.
So, in order to get to the Stanley Cup, I mean, do you think they're close? Do you think they have more than one or two needs? I think they have multiple needs. And at some point, you're going to have to take a chance. At some point.
Yeah.
And there are teams out there like Edmonton who may finally be at the point where they say, we can't keep finishing last with this core group. We're going to have to move somebody. And maybe we're going to have to, you know, bite the cheese when
I'll
we
be
do.
Honest, Bob. I think there are other teams before Edmonton that would think that way,
such as
Carolina. I think that they're starting to realize, you know, their gravity more now, and realize they're starting to think about McDavid and Eichel. Not bad.
Yeah,
that would be good for us. And I mean, there's another dimension to what's going on.
So you're talking about dumping.
Damn right.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. They have veteran players that teams like the Toronto Maple Leafs, teams like the Rangers, teams like the Bruins.
But see,
would
I don't
salivate,
want.
To,
I'm not interested
over.
In a veteran player. No, I'm interested in a young.
No, but you're
player.
Talking taking like, chances though, Bob. Yeah. You're talking. You're only going to take a chance on a guy like Eric Staal, or Jordan Staal. You're going to take chances on somebody like that who thinks you think can help you in the short term. And it solves a big problem in Carolina, too, because you know darn well if one of those guys leaves or elects to remove his no-trade contract,
right.
his clause, that they're going to be 30th. And this is a good year to be 30th if you can tread water that way.
How many players, though, on Toronto's roster do you think they have that's going to get them that kind of a player?
I can't even... I would depend on the team, I guess, obviously. I mean, they have a backup goaltender that may have some, has value.
But Reimer is not getting
But
you.
Nobody, he's a second guy in a deal. Okay. So in other words, so you
maybe
may.
Maybe third.
Could
I think,
be.
I think so.
Maybe, I don't think the Toronto Maple Leafs defense is good enough, but they do have volume. When healthy, they have. Six or seven guys or eight guys that can play a little bit. So that's why I bring up Phaneuf, because he's got a big contract and you're going to get a big contract coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Most teams are at the cap. So you got to trade money for money.
Yep.
You got $7 million in Phaneuf.
Yep.
Maybe with a Reimer, maybe that gets you a Staal. Maybe that gets you an Eberle or a Hall or a...
I don't think you get Nugent Hopkins. I don't think you have any chance of getting Taylor Hall with that. Or even Eberle, really.
My guess is you're right. But that's the kind of deal that I'm thinking about. It's got to be big. It's got to be a high-risk, game-changing kind of deal for a significant player. To bring in another guy to play in the third line doesn't make any sense to me. And I think you have assets that you could... in the right scenario with teams like Edmonton and Carolina and not Columbus much anymore.
No.
Columbus made the hurt. Playoffs. They're coming.
I mean, Columbus is one of those teams that's watching the Maple Leafs road trip.
Yeah.
You know, because they're, I mean, by February 15th, you wonder how far, how close those two teams are together.
Yeah. In any event, let's take the break. When we come back, we'll talk about the longest shootout in NHL history. It lasted 20 hours. Well, not quite, but it seemed like it to me. That and other stuff when Primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Did Bob McCowan just say what I think he said? You can rewind Primetime Sports Podcast when you subscribe at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. On demand. On demand. On demand. On demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590.
What are you laughing at now? 29 minutes before the hour. It's prime time on the Sportsnet radio and television networks. John Shannon, Elliot Friedman, Scott Stinson over there. So this week, please, Gary, were you watching? The Panthers and the Capitals took part in the longest shootout in NHL history.
Fantastic.
It lasted 20 rounds, 4.5 hours. three people were unconscious by the end of it. Hundreds went to sleep. Fortuitously, I didn't see any of it. Now, there were 11 goals out of 40, which isn't, that's pretty good.
Yeah. I thought it was tremendously enjoyable. Oh. I thought it was exciting.
Really?
Yes.
Well, then why don't we just have a shootout? Here's what I say. Here's what I say. If you have to have the shootout, let's have the shootout before the game.
You can have it anytime you want, Bob. You can have it any time you want. Play the game. Do it before the game. You can have it any time you want if it decides winning.
Okay.
The whole concept is people walk out of the building knowing some team won the game.
Couldn't we just do a coin flip and then it would pretty much. You
know, I'd be happy with
that.
We'd
be out of there quicker.
I'd be happy. I'd be really happy with that.
You guys, who put coal in your stocking today? Both of you. Shame on you.
See, I think if you have the shootout before the game, like every game you start out, game time is 7:35. So at 7:25, come early, see the shootout. No one will be there. They'll all be drinking beer in the concourse.
That's okay.
Oh, in Toronto, will be sushi, not
sushi
beer.
And beer. Actually. And sushi.
Exactly. Have the shootout before the game. Then you know if this game ends in a tie, this is the team that's going to win.
They get the push.
Now, at least you got a coach going.
Okay. I'm with that. I don't mind that, Bob. Good. So you like the shootout. So you like the shootout.
No, I'm just trying to find any way I can to eliminate the shootout at 10:30 at night.
I generally have to tell you I hate the shootout, but you could not like that.
It was compelling.
It was different. It was, you'd never seen it before. I mean, you're sitting there all of a sudden, you're like, who's going to be the last guy that gets to shoot? Like, for the first time ever, we saw guys get to shoot twice.
Yes.
It was good because it was different, but I do generally hate the shootout.
But that's kind of the thing. It's an exceedingly rare occurrence.
That's why it wasn't so bad.
An exciting shootout.
Yeah.
The vast majority of them are not that
unusual. The other thing is,
thank you. Scott can come back. You, on the other hand.
Congratulations. You get your gift as we leave, Scott.
Fantastic. Hold on. There are gifts?
Yeah, that's right.
For some.
I mean, two nights later or the night later, the National Hockey League made the national news on two channels in the United States because of this shootout. It was the same thing at the Olympics with T.J. Oshie.
So what? What has that got to do with the price of team?
Because what? At a certain point, you still have to grow the game. The hardcore audience in the United States is not understanding where the puck goes all the time. And if there's a way to introduce people to the game, that's not a bad thing, Bob.
Those people are too stupid to be hockey fans. Forget them.
Bob, I'm just saying it wasn't bad. There could be that family that says, hey, we saw the shootout. Let's go to a game. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with
so
that.
So screw the 10 million hockey fans that couldn't care less about the shootout, and let's go after that one family of Bubba and Skeeter and his wife.
You know what? The hardcore fan is going to show up.
Was it Bubba and Skeeter two different people or one person? I thought they were two.
No, whatever. In Doton, Alabama, going, I like that. Let's go to a game. Well, we don't have a team. Too bad.
In Sunrise, Florida, there might be more people to stands because of the shootout. Actually a good thing. That's a good thing, Bob.
Do you need? What is the mathematical equation that you require, Shannon?
I don't know. We'll check the attendance in the next couple of games. I don't know, Bob.
If it goes up by two, you're going to say, well, see, there you go, the shootout.
We do this navel gazing. We don't understand why more Americans don't like our game. And more,
I understand perfectly. The game has been on national television in the United States since 1960, John.
I'm well aware of that, Bob.
People in the United States know exactly what hockey is. They just, most of them don't like it.
But the game has changed since 1960, Bob. The game that we now, that Elliot works on, is not anywhere near the game that I started in the
80s. The rink is still 200 by 80 or whatever the hell it is.
200 by 85, Bob. It's okay.
Thank you. And they played on the, and they have a red line, although they don't use it anymore. And then there's the blue lines. And there's two goals and a guy
now I understand why Americans don't understand it, because Bob's been trying to explain it to them.
I mean, this whole notion that somehow we'll find that secret ingredient that'll make Americans love this game.
No.
It's been 55 bleeping years on national television.
And by the way, Bob, we're still trying to grow the game in this country, too.
No, you're trying to regrow it because, you know.
You're trying to grow the game here, too. I mean, if 2 million people watch on Saturday nights, people are saying, well, what are the other are the 9 million homes doing? Why aren't they all watching? You know, come on.
How long do you need the shootout for? How long has the shootout been in existence? 20 years?
I think since 2005.
Out of the lockout.
2005.
Was that all it was?
The second last lockout.
God, it seems like longer.
I know, because
has attendance gone up?
Attendance is probably at its maximum. Last year might have been the best year.
Well, if
attendance.
It's at its maximum, then who cares?
At its best. At its best.
You can't put any more people, can't squeeze anybody else in there.
Well, maybe they'll leave if they take the shootout out, Bob.
Maybe they won't like the game as much. I think it's important to have a winner.
Why don't we find out?
I think it's
out.
Important to have a winner.
You know what, Bob? At the end of the day, you get 82 games a year times 30 teams.
Yeah.
Divided by two. You're always looking for something.
Why not divide it by four?
I'm just
can we
trying
divide
to,
by four?
I'm trying to do accurate math.
It's 1,230 regular season
Thank
games.
You very much. You want to have something interesting to tune into once in a while.
Yes.
Whether you like the shootout or not, and I hate it.
You don't think the game's interesting?
No, I think, but
you're a hockey guy.
But there's
you
all
like the game.
No, don't twist. There, it always comes
I'm
down
twisting
to
anything.
Don't twist.
Don't
Bob.
Twist. What I'm saying is that every sports fan wants to see something different, right?
Huh? You still talking?
Yes. And that
I was
different.
But haven't got to the point where the shootout isn't really. I just don't think it's that unique to anyone anymore. And you
that
get,
one was.
And you get the yes, that one was. But you get the side effect of it distorts the results, and you have teams like New Jersey last year who don't make the playoffs because they had a 0-13 record in the shootout. I mean, like, it just seems to me you'd rather have ultimately your playoff seeding, which we said earlier, you know, it's really hard to make the playoffs. So you should make the playoffs on your merits and not your ability to basically get some luck. You're working your way.
Well, see, the thing
are you related to Ken Holland? Because it sounds like you've been listening to him at dinner.
No, he's honest.
Yeah, it's true. I agree with that.
Here's one of the things that I think makes the point for me and for those of us who aren't shootout guys. Who's got the best shootout percentage in the NHL this year?
During the regular season? I don't know which team off the top of my head.
How about individual player? Who's the best shootout guy?
Jussi Jokinen. Always
well,
been
good. He's historically him, Radim Verbata. Those are the guys who have this particular season, I don't know off the top of my head.
I have no
idea. You think you should know that?
There's a lot of things I should probably know.
Don't
that
you
I
think
don't
that's
know.
A statistic? If this is that important, don't you think that's a stat you should know?
Well, the thing is,
and
Bob.
And why aren't the best players in the game the best shooters in the shootout?
Why aren't they?
Aren't they?
Who
no,
says
I agree.
They
aren't.
They're not. I don't think
they're not.
Are.
They're not. Like, for instance, who?
Sidney? Malkin?
They're not good in the shootout?
Are they at the top? They're the best scorers. These are the best scorers in the NHL. These are the most skilled players, the best players in the game.
Give Elliot 3 minutes, he'll find out.
I hate when I have to do research and prepare for a show.
Yeah, the idea is to prepare, though. You're supposed to do it before the show, not during the show.
I'm sorry, I didn't realize
you don't have to get specific about it. I understand this is not a skill that the best players in the game necessarily excel at. We know Sidney Crosby is going to be among the leading scorers in the NHL. We know Phil Kessel is going to be a top 10 scorer. We know Stamkos is going to be a top 10 scorer. We know who the top 10 scorers are going to be most years. There may be a couple surprises.
I hope those three guys are in the top 10 shootouts.
I'm sorry. I just had to change my password because I was worried the North Koreans were going to get it, so I have to wait to log in.
You can't mention that. You can't even mention North Korea.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
I think further to Bob's point, the over time, over the number of years the shootout have been in existence, it tends to settle at about 33% goal rate, like across
right.
all the different
That's right.
players who are shooting and goaltenders who are stopping. It just always kind of settles down to it's a 2/3 chance that it'll be a save. And that's why I use that goal flip of a coin thing. It's like a flip of a coin with a 33% chance of
it's
a goal.
It's not a skill.
It's not. And over time, well,
it is. No,
it is a skill.
It is
it's
a skill.
It's not a skill.
Yes, it is.
So when they call it a skills competition, it's not a skill?
Just because they call it a skills competition doesn't make it a skill.
There's a tremendous amount of skill in scoring on a breakaway. There's a tremendous amount of skill on scoring on a penalty shot. There's skill there. All of a sudden, because you don't like when they do it, it's not a skill. You know it's a skill.
I don't like it, period.
And the goal...
And what I'm hoping is that the American Hockey League, who's now gone to this 4-on-4, then 3-on-3 skaters...
And then, by the way, what do they do if it's still tied after 3-on-3?
Well, then they quit.
No, they don't quit.
They go home.
Okay, can I give you some updated statistics?
Yeah, please.
There are only two players this year at home, for example... Who are
What's
more,
the relevance of it at home?
Well, because it's the first number that comes up. At home, that have more than one shootout shot and more than one shootout goal. There are only two players who are 2 for 2.
Okay, and they are?
Sidney Crosby and Nathan MacKinnon.
Two pretty skilled players.
But overall...
Look at him. Here, give me your glasses.
No, you can't use these things.
Okay, Sidney Crosby is 3 for 3 this year.
Uh-huh.
Antoine Vermette is 3 for 3 this year.
Have they only played 3 overtime games?
Three shootouts. Nathan MacKinnon is 3 for 3 this year. So you've got the best player.
Well, that's pretty good.
A 19-year-old who's going to be a great player. And Vermette, a 33-year-old, is a pretty good player.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
That's all.
But 2 for 2 this year.
Is this all at home?
No, this is overall.
Oh, okay.
I believe two for two. Are you going to recite the whole round?
Yes, I'm going to keep going down. So there's three guys who've taken three attempts and are three
for
three.
I just don't know why you're so horrifically opposed to this thing. Because, I mean, people actually stand up and enjoy it.
I hate the idea of, well, first of all, I hate people.
Well, okay.
So, you don't want to see them having fun.
Yeah, heaven forbid them having
fun. On that, you and I are in agreement.
Okay.
Anything that makes them happy makes me sad. I'm okay. Against that.
Okay.
So that's the first point.
Well, Merry Christmas, sure, everybody.
I'm not sure that's one for you or one for me.
I don't understand how a sport can create something that isn't inherent in the sport and say we're going to decide the result of games. The reason you go to games is to see the team that you like win. Home or away. Winning is what it's about.
Correct.
That is the agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Every single night they play. And now we're going to, two teams battle for 65 minutes, tooth and nail, raw to the bone, their emotions hanging out. And then you go, now we're going to have a shootout.
Oh, well, in this way, but
why don't we have a coloring contest tonight? Let's get
the crayon, what the shootout does, because you're coloring outside the lines, is guarantee you what you want is a winner. It guarantees you a winner.
I spent 50 years watching the National Hockey League, or however long it was, when a tie was a possible result. It never bothered me at all. It was never an issue. Now, if you can extend overtime to the point where it all but eliminates, preferably eliminates, but at least all but eliminates the shootout, I'm happy. Because at least it's hockey. Even 3-on-3 hockey is still hockey. It's the game. It's what we've come to understand. It's what we go to see for 65 minutes in any event. All got quiet. I guess I won.
After a while, you just give up.
Okay, give up earlier next time. We all know the Russian economy has taken a nosedive over the last little while, and now it would appear that things are going to change in the KHL. We had Dmitry Chesnikov on last night from Yahoo, mm-hmm. and he doesn't think the league's going under.
I agree with that.
But he does think there'll be significant change, either fewer teams going forward, or at the very least, a complete change in the economic reality. Because mm-hmm. right now, the ruble is worth half of what it was. Mm-hmm. And that's what they pay in.
I think the most fascinating thing is yesterday, Ken Campbell of the Hockey News interviewed a goalie, a Canadian goalie, Glass, who plays over there. And he talked about how he was losing half his salary, and today they cut him. I guess they weren't very happy with his interview. That's a tough league like that. There are lots of stories about that over the years, about players just being cut out of nowhere and not getting paid. But I do agree with Dmitry. I think that, you know, one of the things about this league, Bob, is that there are almost no revenues. Like, this league is basically exists because Vladimir Putin wants it to exist. And he told all of his guys who made a fortune.
The oligarchs
that, hey, you've made millions off Russia. Now put something back into it.
Well,
so, you know, they don't make a lot of revenues. Ticket prices are not very high.
Right.
For some of those guys, this isn't the worst thing because it just means their costs are lower.
Well, and let's face it, they have a league.
Hockey sense.
A league that was through 9 time zones at one point. They had, and they actually tried to expand into non-Russian cities. Helsinki, Jokerit is part of the KHL.
Zagreb.
Whether they were in the Czech Republic as well, mm-hmm. which I believe the team there has folded or is in serious financial distress. So what you're probably going to see is a smaller group of cities in and around 4 or 5 time zones. I don't think we'll see teams in Vladivostok from Vladivostok to Moscow anymore. And you'd have to wonder, too, how many imports will or won't be part of it in the future, because the cost of bringing imports in is something that that the Russians are always conscious of.
Well, at half the price, half the value, you know, depending on how long the Russian economy stays depressed, and Putin was on the other day, suggested it's going to be a couple of years.
Yeah.
Now, what does he know? But if he's right, who's going to go?
Yeah.
Well, I think for a lot of players, it's good coin. They're going to lose. I mean, it probably drops the cost of doing business in places like Switzerland or even the American Hockey League. You know, there were a lot of players in the American Hockey League would have liked to have had that got more money over there.
Mm-hmm.
Probably drops
maybe
the cost.
Maybe they come back.
Yep. Drops the cost. Because you know in the American Hockey League, if you sign a contract for a few hundred thousand dollars, you're getting that money. Like, it's going to be guaranteed. You can get it guaranteed.
Right.
In Russia, the danger has always been that somewhere out of nowhere, they just fire you and you never get your cash.
The president of the KHL said yesterday, and I mean, who knows whether this will
be. He's been the president for a month.
Right. Too. But
let's
he did say that they.
Good timing.
That they will guarantee, you know, they've told the team owners they have to guarantee the salary, not at a level consistent with the ruble, but at a level consistent with what they expected to be paid. Like, basically, they can't index it to the euro or whatever and say, right. Well, now the ruble's worth X, so now you're getting X. They basically said, we need to guarantee these players what they expect to make to prevent them from all leaving. But, I mean,
I think
will
that's
the owners
a lot of,
really right. be thrilled with that?
I think that's a noble theory, but it's kind of not the way that has been done business over there. Like Kovalchuk, they're going to take care of him. There's no way they're letting their marquee player even think about leaving. And they'll take care of their key Russian players or their key foreign players. But there's going to be a lot of guys who go over there because they can make a few hundred thousand more there than they can the American Hockey League. Or they leverage a better contract out of the AHL or a Swiss league, for argument's sake. And all that's going to be gone for them. Their leverage disappears.
I mean, you alluded to the economics of the league. I think the sense is that most of the revenue that comes in is from advertising, actually.
I
think would probably be the same with, you know, television deals, advertising for the National Hockey League, too. Wouldn't they make more money, John, out of ancillary revenue than ticket sales?
In the NHL?
Yeah.
No, the NHL has always been.
It's a gate-driven league.
Maybe with the Rogers deal, that may be changing the percentages, but more than 50% of revenues in the National Hockey League have always come from ticket sales.
Okay. I'm just wondering how.
I have no idea.
At some point, you have to wonder, what is this here for? If you've got X number of teams, none of them make money, so you have economic struggles for a year or two. At some point, you wonder, is Putin eventually going to acknowledge? He doesn't seem to be one to acknowledge.
Remember, a lot of
doesn't really acknowledge defeat.
Wait a second. Attendance is going to go down because of the economic reality. When the ruble goes down in value by half, that means all the goods that you need to buy that come from outside the country are going to go up, and they already have. So now you have to cut back on things like going to hockey games.
But remember, the cause and effect of one of the reasons the KHL was really formed was everything was built aimed at Sochi.
Yeah.
Everything for the KHL was built. By the time this league matures, by the time we have some of our great players back playing in Mother Russia, we're going to be playing for gold medals on our homeland at the Olympics.
John, don't you remember after the lockout, there were all the reports about how Datsyuk and Ovechkin and those
Absolutely.
Guys didn't want to come back?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And everything was pointed at February 2014. And look how that worked out.
Are you suggesting there were some Sochi-related things that weren't really considering what would happen after the fact?
You mean like all the arenas too, Scott?
Like the entire development?
The whole thing?
I mean, everything was pointed that way. Mm-hmm. And the KHL was part of that. You know, the one guy that's been very quiet on this, publicly at least from my point of view, is Rennie Fussell. Because Rennie was always trying to bridge the gap between the Russians and the NHL and Europe, and trying to appease all of the constituents. And with what's gone on with the KHL, you have to wonder where Rene now feels his role is in trying to create some conciliation.
We got a break, but I think in the best case scenario, the quality of play in the KHL is going to go down to some extent. I don't know how much, but to some extent. And the notion of one day having a world championship between the Stanley Cup champion
Agreed.
And the KHL is it just got pushed
Agreed.
Into the far distant future.
I know we got to go, but I had a quick email conversation with Mike Keenan, who's still over there coaching. I said, everything good? He says, yes, but I think his money's going to a Swiss account. So.
Revenue Canada.
We have one more hour of the roundtable left. Raptors 20-6 to start the season. Edmonton Oilers dismissed their coach. We'll talk about those things and more. This is Primetime.